Hey everyone, just want to give you a quick heads up that there are a few glitches in the audio for today's episode. It's only in a few parts, and we thought that the ideas shared far outweigh a few sound issues, so we're still going to put it out. Thank you as always for listening and for your support, and please enjoy the show.
Looking at some of the greats and seeing a slightly overcut dovetail or seeing a slight little gap on a shoulder. And these are things that would have paralyzed a lot of people. Like, oh my God, I'm awful. I can't do this. And it's like, no. That's what handmade looks like.
That's the voice of Vic Teslin, owner of Vic Teslin Woodworks. And I'm excited to talk with him right after a quick word from our sponsors.
Introducing Astra HP, the newest high-performance innovation in cutting-edge technology from Bits and Bits. Let me tell you what's new about it. It's incredibly thin, measuring at just 0.3 microns. It's also tougher than ever with an impressive 5,000 Vickers hardness, and it's specially designed to reduce friction and heat buildup, leading to cleaner cuts and longer tool life. Available now on all their newest spiral CNC bits and router bits. So if you want to check it out yourself, go to bitsbits.com. That's BITS, BITS.com.
Hello and welcome to Building a Furniture Brand with Ethan Abramson, the show that talks about the business behind the furniture business. On this episode, I sit down with Vic Teslin, owner of Vic Teslin Woodworks. Vic wears a lot of hats. Furniture maker, teacher, writer, speaker, the list goes on and on. Chances are, if you've read about woodworking, you've read something he has written. Being around so many furniture makers and understanding furniture at a deep enough level to not only write about it, but also to teach others about it, and not to mention building impressive furniture in his own right, has given Vic a perspective on the industry that many aim for, but not all achieve. A perspective that he gladly shares in this episode. Follow along as we talk about learning how to have an ego, how important mistakes are, why showing up can be your greatest skill, and much more. So let's start the episode and hear about Vic's story in his own words.
I started woodworking when I was in the military, and my daughter was getting ready to be born, and for some reason I had this strong urge to make something for her. I just needed to make something with my own hands, and so I had never woodworked before. This is long before the internet was a reliable thing. So I found a woodworking magazine that basically had a side table that could be used as a bedside table. And I bought that magazine and I bought wood and I joined a wood hobby club and I proceeded to make the ugliest bedside table you ever did see.
That was the start. That's the very, very start of it. And it's something that people can relate to.
Right.
People don't wake up with woodworking skills. You start building something. And as a teacher, you know that where it has to progress, move forward, forward, forward. So you picked up that magazine. You built your first thing.
Right.
Right off the bat, were you saying, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life? Or was there a little bit more of a runway before you went from what you were doing to jumping straight into a big pile of sawdust?
Right. So that first table was not a success. I didn't know anything about wood movement. And so I built it in the winter time and made it so that the drawer sides fit perfectly into the pocket. And of course, in the summer months, you could not get the drawer open. And so my daughter just learned anything in there, you're not having it over the summertime. So I get into it. But then I ended up, I played rugby for the military and I ended up getting a pretty decent injury from that. And so I had to start making decisions about what I was going to do outside of the military. And so at that point, I'd kind of gotten further and further along and I was, you know, really good at making things out of plywood and that sort of thing, but I wanted to do something a little bit more. And so there were other options as far as what I wanted to do. And I looked at various courses and things like that I could do, but it always came back to woodworking. And so I knew that woodworking was going to be a tough go because, you know, it's one thing to do it as a hobby. It's another thing to make money off of it. And so I decided to enroll in a private school here in Canada called Rosewood Studio. And basically I took their full furniture design and making course.
Now, when you were doing that, you were taking the course, you were learning that, but you had the idea of becoming a furniture maker. But at the same time, you knew, and you just said it, and you knew it then, and you know it now, that the furniture industry is a hard industry to get into. It's not like you're falling over money for every piece of furniture you build. And as much as we'd all love it to be that way, it's a tough industry to break into. It's a tough industry to build up your skills. It's a tough industry to build up the amount of tools that you need. So when you were thinking that going in, knowing that this was all happening, how are you thinking about using those skills to build a company and make money from it?
Right. So the one thing I knew about the military is that, you know, if you turned up on time, you know, and ready to work, you could be successful. So I naively thought that if I just did that, if I just applied the same work ethic that I had in the service, that I would be just fine. You know, I had heard encouraging words from other people that had got out before me and said, you know, there's lots of work out there as long as you're willing to work, you know, and that sort of thing. So I thought, well, even if the odds are a little stacked against me, I'm going to give this a go. And I had also learned, like, early on, you know, in those courses, like, some of the people that I had studied under, you know, they didn't just make furniture. You know, they did a lot of different things. They wrote articles for magazines. They wrote books. They taught. And so I wanted to do bespoke furniture. I wanted to do one-off stuff. I didn't want to come up with a line and then have it produced, mainly because I get bored very quickly. And so, like, to do the same thing over and over again, just, I knew that that wasn't going to work for me. And so I had to try to figure out how to get myself into that sort of higher level. I could just do, one-off work. And that was difficult because that's very much a who you are, not necessarily what you're good at. People aren't necessarily coming to you for a chair. They're coming to you because you're this person and you make these chairs. And so that was a really tough thing to sort of to understand and realize that regardless of how hard I worked or, you know, what I did, it may not go. And then I sort of stumbled into writing kind of by accident. A local magazine, a Canadian woodworking magazine, which is still in existence, the last one, they needed photos of somebody putting wood through a machine for one of their articles. And so they contacted Rosewood, where I was a resident craftsman, met with me and said, here, can you, you know, stick these boards through a planer and all that other stuff. And so I did that. And then one of the photos became a cover. And so I was at a woodworking show and I was loading all my furniture into the show. And the publisher of the magazine was there and he's like, hey, you're on the cover of our latest magazine. And so I started chatting with him and he said, have you ever thought about writing? And I hadn't, because, you know, I dropped out of high school in my last year to join the military. And so I didn't, you know, I had been told by many, many English teachers that I was not good at English. I didn't know what to say except for yes, because I knew of myself that if I said yes, I would figure it out. And I did. I figured it out. And then article after article was getting published and I was getting more confident in writing and that sort of thing. And then I actually got offered a job at that magazine as their editor. And so it just sort of all kept going and I kept not saying no to things. And the best piece of advice I ever got was when I was at Rosewood and I was Michael Fortune, the Canadian furniture maker, was there teaching. And he told this awesome story about how he was like just starting out in the 70s. He visited a client about wanted an etagere built for their home. And Michael Fortune's like, yes, of course. Yeah, we'll totally do that. And then took the deposit and then drove immediately to the library to look up what an étagère was. Now, it turns out that an étagère is just a fancy word for a cabinet with glass on it and all that other kind of stuff. But he had no idea. But had he said no, he wouldn't have gotten the commission. And so I learned from that story that it's like, yeah, don't say no. Just say yes.
I hear you. Saying yes to things can add a lot of items to your plate and add a lot of emails to your inbox and a lot of phone calls to your day. But at the same time, it can push you forward in ways that you never expected to go and meet people and have interactions and do things that were never on your radar to begin with. So saying yes with the asterisk of you can say no after might be a good way to live your life.
Right.
I want to go back real quick to something you mentioned earlier in that last answer, and that is about making furniture and it being sometimes more about who you are and your name rather than the furniture that you're building. And that is this balance of business versus skills. And you see it from both sides because you teach skills, you teach woodworking skills, you teach people how to be better at their craft, but you also run businesses and understand the importance of getting your name out there and doing that. So in your mind, where do you think the balance of being good at business, being good at selling yourself, being good at selling your company versus your skills and being good at building furniture and making things and building things that last? What do you think that balance is?
Well, I think it's probably skewed a little bit more in one direction than people would be willing to admit. But I feel like the marketing and the business aspect is actually more than the skill aspect. And so I've heard from many successful furniture makers who have said, like, I'm not the best furniture maker in the world, but I can market. And that's really what sort of stuck in my brain is that you could try to reach perfection and try to, you know, make everything as perfect as possible and do the best work as possible. But if you can't market it, if you can't get it in front of people, then that's difficult. And in fact, I really struggled with that because I have a hard time selling myself and still do to this day. And so when I left the corporate environment and started my own, like, again, just me on my own, I think that I would have struggled more if I didn't have that person to help me out, who basically helped me with the marketing and the promotion and booking students and getting comments from them so she could upload them onto Google reviews and like all of those sorts of things that I just I didn't like doing because it felt like kind of, I don't know, egotistical maybe, or like to talk about how good I am and why you should spend money with me as a student and all that other stuff. And so I struggle with it to this day, but Andrea has no problems doing it. And she has no problems pulling people aside and saying, hey, you should take a class with this guy because he's really good. And half the time I end up going, oh my God, what is she doing? But that really is the key, like doing that, because I consider myself to be a pretty competent furniture designer and maker. But you know, I would not have been able to sell myself. And so that's why I'm saying like, it's more important, I think, than actually being, you know, coming up with cool furniture and building it.
For somebody whose business name is their first and last name, like yours, I feel like you need to have a little bit more ego going on there.
You know, it's true. And I think that like most of the furniture makers that I knew didn't trade by like a company name. They traded with their own name. Because that name then becomes your brand, and then It goes from there. And so that's kind of what I went with. When I started the teaching side of it, again, I had put myself out there quite a bit. You know, at that point, I had written a book and I was writing a second. I had moved up from Canadian Woodworking Magazine and was writing in Fine Woodworking Magazine. I had one of my books translated into German. So like a lot, my name then started to be the recognizable bit, because at the bottom of every byline, by Vic Teslin. And so that became the brand. And that's why to this day, it's VTW or Vic Teslin Woodworks, because it was the most recognizable thing. I probably could have come up with some clever name that, you know, maybe meant something more to me than anybody else. But I felt that that was the most recognizable thing. So
the idea of selling, whether it's your name or a made up name for your company, you have to have that ego. You have to have that selling. You have to be able to push that forward, push that into the world, and make it into something bigger than yourself. Even if it is your name, it has to be bigger than you. And
for sure,
I know you said that you still have trouble pushing that ego part of it, but as you've grown in this industry, you can see that you need to have ego in this. It's not a bad thing to want to sell yourself. People are coming to you to buy what you're making, or to buy what you're teaching, or to read what you're writing. And this is for everybody who wants to start a business. You need to push yourself out there. You need to be outgoing, and you need to make sure that whether you think it in your mind or not, the people you're talking to think that you're the best thing going.
Right.
This is at the heart of it, a business show. We talk about the business, we talk about that part of moving your business forward. But I know that there's a lot of people listening who are still holding on to that it's skills. That's what makes you move forward in your business. And for some people, it's true. And you do have to have skills, whether or not you have the business side, to even get a furniture business off the ground if you're building it yourself. So let's switch to the skills part, the woodworking part, the actual in the shop part. And as a teacher, you're dealing with people who have tons of experience and are trying to get better, but also people who are just starting out with the idea that they want to have a furniture company, but they haven't, quote unquote, got their hands dirty yet in the business and in the building. So when you're putting your teacher, your shop teacher hat on, what are some skills that you should really lean into at the beginning of your building career that are going to pay off as you build more and more?
I try to instill confidence. People always struggle with, they try to make up for their lack of skill with accuracy. And so if they buy this jig that helps them get cut perfect this and perfect that, then that's all they need. And then that'll make up for the fact they've never done it before. There has to be some time spent, as you said, getting your hands dirty. You know, you can't learn how to cut your first set of hand cut dovetails on a commission piece. Like, that's madness. You will be a neurotic mess by the end of it. They will look like garbage, I promise, because that's what all dovetails look like when they first come out. And you're going to have all the extra stress of it being a commission. And so it's like, if your plan is to get into business, like, just start making everything. Like the cabinets in your shop, the bench that you work at, the stand that your drill press lives on, like, build all that stuff and try new techniques with everything. You may think it's stupid to make a cabinet for your drill press that has dovetails on it, but it's better to screw those dovetails up and have them be functional but look like trash. Like those skills. And those aren't hard skills. It's not like you need to learn how to cut straight with a saw and you need to, you know how to fit a tenon. And because, like, of course, that's the meat and potatoes of the whole situation. But you have to understand what's good enough and what people are going to pay for and try to work it all out. But I think confidence is the big one. Like, and be honest with yourself. Like, you know, I lied to myself for quite a few years where I was not like fake it till you make it situation, but kind of at a point I realized I wasn't putting the work in order to become really good at, because you need a certain level of unconscious competency. There's certain things that you have to be able to do without thinking about. So those are always the difficult things. And again, not really woodworking skills, but it's like a mindset going into it. And so it's just time in and getting it done.
It's putting the work in, it's repetition, it's understanding your own limitations and the tool's limitations so that you can work to overcome both of those things and be able to, like you said, just have that competency running in the background that no matter what you pick up, project or tool, you have a base level that you can start using it and understand how to use it.
Yeah, it's true.
As somebody who started building furniture from a magazine and then apprenticed and worked at a place in the beginning, and now somebody who teaches, where do you come down on the idea of if you want to start a furniture company, you should take classes and learn from that, or you should apprentice or work for a company first before you go out on your own?
I think working with people is a good idea, even if it's not. Like, I mean, for one, it's like it's experience. It's experience that someone else is willing to pay you to get, as opposed to you trying to pay yourself to get experience. You're getting so much information from them, even just sharing a shop with somebody, you know, having another woodworker to bounce ideas off of. I mean, I was so fortunate in that I was invited back to the school that I studied at as a resident craftsman. And basically, that was like an incubator. I was able to work for them for a portion of the week in order to for my bench space. And then I got to develop my own stuff. Guest instructors would come in and I would be their shop techs. And I'm like, when you're having conversations with really well-known furniture makers on the back end of the class, and they're saying, hey, I need you to make me some of these jigs in order to do this. And they're explaining things to you. Like, so if I had decided to just sort of follow one woodworker's piece of advice, one instructor's piece of advice, like I probably wouldn't have been as well off in the situation as I came to be. Having different ideas and different opinions, because you're probably aware there are a few opinions in woodworking.
A couple here and there.
Yeah. So the idea is that, like, if I take, for example, how I cut my dovetails, right? I got taught at the very beginning to cut them pins first, which is the most divisive thing that you could possibly say, right? Whether you cut them tails first or pins first, the reality is nobody cares and nobody can tell. But anytime somebody is demonstrating cutting dovetails, I sit and I watch what they're doing, because there might be something that they do that I could apply to my technique that would allow me to be more efficient, cut quickly, you know, those sorts of things. And so if you just sort of self-teach and don't really expose yourself, I think that sort of then hems you into like a pretty narrow way of doing things. And sometimes you just need to be able to do something slightly differently. You know, like if all you know is how to cut a tenon on a table saw, and then for whatever reason, all you've got is a bandsaw, I think it's important to work with others. I think it's important, even if you're just like listening to podcasts or watching videos, which, I mean, again, like there's a lot of garbage out there, and not this podcast, obviously.
Appreciate that.
You have to understand, like, the reason why yours isn't garbage is because you're living it, you're doing it, your people can go to your company and order beautiful furniture. And so I take your advice because you clearly know what you're doing. But I mean, if you can work with somebody, even if it's just like hanging out in their shop for an hour on a weekend or something and asking questions and stuff, the majority of my students are actually mentorship, where basically they contact me, you know, once a week or once a month, and we spend an hour or two on Zoom, or they come to the shop and they just pepper me with questions. You know, I was going to cut this joint like this. How do you do it? And then I tell them, okay, good. And then like a lot of it is just reassurance and understanding. So having that ability to be in a shop with somebody else, and even better if they're paying you to be there, like I would take that opportunity in a heartbeat, as opposed to just sort of like, I'm going to do my own thing. And because chances are you don't have what it takes to do your own thing yet.
Building a community around you, and whether you call it the furniture industry or the woodworking community, or it's your friends or even, you know, neighbors who are doing this, getting a different take on it is the way you're going to grow forward. That's what we try and do on this show. And that's what events do. And that's what bringing people out to go to classes with you. You got to keep expanding your ideas. And the best way to do that is to actually talk to people or actually interact with people. And the question that I like to end all my shows with, and that's advice from you and for people who are starting out or for people who have been doing this for a long time. And I know you've talked through a lot of the things that you would say to new and continuously working furniture makers, but over the years, what have you seen doing it yourself and talking with people and going to a lot of shops of successful furniture makers? What have you seen is something that you would impart to people listening to this for them to run their business better?
Yeah. It's the advice that I've been following since the beginning, and that's show up. Like I said at the beginning of our chat about, you know, if you wanted to be successful in the military, you just had to show up on time wearing the right uniform and be prepared to work. And you could be the sergeant major one day. Like, that's no lie. I think, I can't remember which celebrity said it, but that 80% of success is showing up. And it really is. Like, if you show up, and whether you feel like showing up, or whether you, regardless of the voices you're hearing in your head telling you you suck and that you're not going to make it and that it's going to be awful and you're going to be on the streets, like those voices are real, and they have a real impact on you. And you just have to push past that, and you have to say, no, I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing, and figure out how to make it happen. I go to woodworking events. So I went to the Fine Woodworking New England event that happened at Bob Van Dyke School in Manchester, Connecticut. I wasn't lecturing there. I wasn't being paid to be there. But I knew that some of the best furniture makers and woodworkers in the world were going to be there. And so I went and I talked with people and I asked questions and I looked at their work. And I like understood more about, you know, one of the things, I had a friend of mine that came along with me, and he... the biggest thing he took away was looking at some of the greats' work and seeing a slightly overcut dovetail or seeing a slight little gap on a shoulder. And these are things that would have like paralyzed a lot of people, that like, oh my God, I'm awful, I can't do this. And it's like, no. That's what handmade looks like. When you get out there and you put yourself out there and you see people's work and you talk about it and you have conversations, and like, I mean, it's priceless, because that, that showing up exposes you to so much, right? Just like showing up and working for another company for a while, or showing up and listening to how people make presentations. I go and I listen and I watch how they do things. I watch how they handle hard questions, or, you know, the know-it-all questions that you get in classes sometimes, where people are trying to just, you know, spout off and make themselves sound smart. You know, like, it's not like the army where you can just say, sit down and shut up. So you have to be a little bit more delicate than that. Sometimes. But if you're going to do this, be prepared, show up, be there, do it. Like, be part of the community, be part of what's going on. Even if it's just like a little woodworking club in your town or whatever, show up, learn from some of these guys that are like, you know, 80 years old and have been woodworking for a hobby for 60 years. You know, they picked a few things up.
I love that you said about the small imperfections in even the master's work, and it's just out there for everyone to see, because when you're starting building furniture, you think everything needs to be perfect. And as you go on, you realize that a lot of the things that you're staying up sleepless nights for and trying to figure out are only things that only other furniture makers will see. And I'm not advocating for you to put bad work in clients' homes, but there is a point where perfection becomes your enemy. And it's great to hear that you experienced that at such a high level. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing everything else. I know that you're a busy, busy guy, and I appreciate you spending the time to talk with me and share your advice and what you've learned with everybody listening. So thank you so much, and wishing you nothing but success moving forward in all your businesses.
Thanks, man. And I appreciate you taking the time to do what you do, because this is no doubt extremely helpful to a lot of people. Sometimes it's hard advice, and sometimes it's just like a well-placed line that pops into somebody's head that sort of gives them the encouragement to get out there and go after it. So I'm glad to have been a part of it, and it was great to hang out.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you liked what you heard and you got value out of it, please think about leaving a review and subscribing wherever you listen. To learn more about the series, please visit buildingafurniturebrand.com, and feel free to reach out anytime with questions or guest suggestions to hello@buildingafurniturebrand.com. You can find me at The Build with Ethan on Instagram. Hope you enjoyed the show, and can't wait to bring you the next one.